Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 54 of At Odds with Wrestling. Joe and Adam here. Adam?
Yes?
Are you sick and tired of hearing about All Out?
I am sick and tired of hearing about All Out, except for there was one little part that I'll listen to and watch over and over again, but we'll get to that in a second.
Uh-huh.
But there is something... Oh, go ahead.
I only bring that up is because me hearing myself, this brings me up to the fourth recap of the event that I'll have listened to since the event happened on Saturday.
Okay.
Because I did watch, or I did listen to, of course, I watched the show.
Mm-hmm.
We got the Cornette one that comes out today, which I'm listening to against my better judgment. Wednesday Night Wars, the newest members of the podcast family, did theirs, and I listened to that. Final Wrestling Place did theirs, and I listened to that. And then I think it filtered through on the 605 podcast as well.
Okay. I try to not listen to the recap episodes, especially before we record, because I'm afraid that I'm going to hear something and then regurgitate it and forget that I heard it somewhere else, you know, so I don't want to steal credit from somebody's opinions.
I feel as though listening to the other podcast that I listen to about this, and sure, go listen to them as the soon-to-be-named network is becoming more and more of a professional wrestling podcast than anything else.
Yes.
Or podcasting network.
I'll give it
But it helps cement some of my views,
mm-hmm.
and it helped me see other people's views on things. Wait a minute, hang on. The show itself, Wednesday Night Wars, Final Wrestling Place, the Cornette one will be tomorrow, so that one doesn't count, 605, and I listened to Jericho's podcast as well,
mm-hmm.
where he reviewed the show.
See, other than Jericho, you're just looking for a bunch of yes men. All these other people in the network, they're all disciples of Sposto.
Well, no. Well, and now see, that's so funny that you say that. First of all, 605, you think I'm an angry, miserable podcasting person. Like, if you want to hear 50 to 60-year-old boomers complain about everything, then I jokingly say that I could kind of deal with anything that Jim Cornette says when he's talking about wrestling that happened prior to 2004. These people that were on this podcast were like, wrestling peaked in 1989. Everything else since has been horrible. Mm-hmm. I continue to watch and hate wrestling and hate myself, but I'm going to continue watching. And it's just like, really, guys, this is what we're going to do? Oh, boy. It kind of put my perspective on things.
Okay.
And I'm like, hey, my review is going to be pretty okay, you know?
Yeah, fair enough.
Jericho's got the company line, but we'll get to... Chris Jericho's been in the news a lot lately.
He has, but before we go into that, Joe, I have a quick question for you.
Yes?
What's today's date? Do you happen to have it in front of you anywhere?
Recording date or...
Yeah, whichever. What's today?
As we're recording this, it's 9:15 on Wednesday, September 4th, 2019.
Okay, the episode drops on the 5th, you know, at midnight.
Sure.
Are you aware of what happened on September 5th of 2018?
Something?
After Dark, episode 198.
Oh!
Featuring the debut of a Green as Grass podcaster by the name of Adam Van.
Oh, there you go.
And then on September 7th was episode 1 of At Odds with Wrestling. So happy anniversary, buddy.
Tweet!
You know, like, I like to think that you and Todd are like an evolution, and I'm Batista, definitely not Orton. You took me under your wing, and you got what you got, for better or worse.
Yeah, definitely we got what we got.
But, yeah, I know we talked about the anniversary a couple weeks ago, but this is actually the anniversary proper, and I noticed that, because you accused me of not doing any preparation for the show this week, and I was too busy, like, working out the math on the calendar.
Well, you see, this is where your lies come in. I made sure to send you the email early and in advance because obviously there was something important that I needed to watch, and I included a YouTube link for you to watch. And I'd been texting you all week about the ongoing whereabouts of a certain item.
Uh-huh.
And I assumed it was like, well, it's one thing. He'll figure it out. It's a YouTube link. And like, yeah, I did 19 other things, but I forgot to do this thing. And it's like, well, here we go. All right.
How did we last a year with this kind of bickering, John?
Well, that's the thing. This is the first time that we've really had any sort of bickering in regards to unclarity, in regards to what the email says to do. I don't know.
I mean, you were perfectly clear in saying, watch this YouTube clip. I just chose to disregard that.
There you go. So let's get into All Elite Wrestling's All Out event from their home, one of their many homes, if you listen to them. Chicago. Where in Chicago does this take place?
Sears?
Sure.
Not an abandoned Sears in the Phillipsburg Mall, but I think it was the Sears Center.
Right, Sears Center in Hoffman Estates, outside of Chicago, I guess.
Mm.
So I do want to preface this by saying I didn't watch the buy-in, and I heard it was the best so far, which is fainting damning praise.
I did not watch the buy-in either, because it was not provided to me in the clip that was provided to me.
Oh, so. My goodness. You know they're for free on their YouTube site, right?
I have better things to do on a Saturday at, like, 7 p.m.
Gotcha.
All right.
So we're not going to, like, go through the show match by match. We're kind of going to go scattershot throughout things. I guess overall thoughts on the show, anything that stood out to you, you know, any sort of whatever you want to cover.
Absolutely. I mean, can we just start with the thing that we're probably most pumped about? Just go right through it. And that is what I consider the re-debut of Orange Cassidy.
Yes. So, and again, this is not only the best thing that happened on this show, but maybe the best thing that's happened in wrestling in 2019 as part of a major company. So it happens at the tail end of the Dark Order versus the Best Friends match. The Dark Order win. They get the bye in the tournament. Less said about that, the better. And appears the Creepers are attempting to kidnap Trent. And then all of a sudden, the lights go out. Now, if ECW has taught you anything, when the lights go out in the building, that means something cool is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Sabu is going to appear. You know, Jerry the King Lawler is going to be there and try to get lynched by the attention deficit criminals that populate the ECW arena. But when the lights went out, I got a chill, Adam.
Mm-hmm.
I got goosebumps because I knew what was happening. This wasn't stooged off to me ahead of time. But the lights come back on, and in the center of the ring is Orange Cassidy. Orange Cassidy hands in the pockets, does the dive to the outside onto the Creepers, rolls back in, does the nip up, hands still in the pockets. And then as his thanks for saving Trent, him and Chuck, Trent that is, come in. They do the Best Friends hug with Orange Cassidy in the middle. And then they do the Rainmaker pan out for the Best Friends hug.
Yeah, I mean, I was not expecting this. I you know, you said that you didn't know in advance, and I only halfway believe you. But I honestly didn't put two and two together at all to think of, like, you know, Chuck E. T. and Orange Cassidy. I would not have given Cody and all credit to associate him with them, you know, based on, like, their past. You know, I would just figured that they would have thrown him somewhere else. I'm kind of always assuming that they're going to ruin Orange Cassidy because I want them to not do it. Does that make sense?
Right. But, so,
but yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, so I did not know this was coming. I was coming off of that match, which I did enjoy. But when the lights went off, I thought they did that gimmick before with, like, really nothing happening. Or like
They did that actually disappeared. With the debut of the Creeper, with the Dark Order and the Creepers.
Okay. But I feel like they did it again, like, after that, and nothing happened, like, on their second appearance. But for whatever reason, I just kind of wasn't expecting, like you mentioned, the ECW effect, you know, of having, like, somebody awesome showing up. And I did pop a little bit, just a tad bit, when he showed up, and everything was perfect. Like, his glasses didn't even, like, go crooked on his face. Like, it was a perfect storm of just the best possible way you can debut this guy on the main roster, so or on AEW. So I'm very pumped. I don't know what else to say other than it's a good day to be an Orange Cassidy fan.
So this is the Orange Cassidy portion of the show, of course. Mm-hmm. But before I do, I want to get to one little nitpick in regards to AEW and their handling of things. As you mentioned, this is his re-debut.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When you've only had 3 shows and you debut someone in your pre-show battle royal, and then you just wipe that from the memories and just say, this is your new debut. I'm okay with that because it puts him in a bigger light. Shines, you know, puts him in a bigger spotlight, of course, puts him in the middle of like a group that's already established as part of your brand. It looks like they're going to go forward, of course. In the past, Chuck Taylor and Orange Cassidy have had alliances and other promotions. So going forward, obviously in the back of my head, just like with any sort of major wrestling promotion, I'm afraid that my favorite wrestler and my friend is going to get screwed up. They're going to like add their tweaks to it, right? Exactly. You know, you hear stories, like I just listened to a podcast the other day where they were talking about the real Ghostbusters cartoon. You remember the real Ghostbusters cartoon?
Mm-hmm.
So they make the first season, they do full 65 episodes, and then they're going to do 13 more episodes. So the first 65 episodes, the network had nothing to do with. The first 65 episodes, like the first week, it's a huge success. So those next 13 episodes, the network has to put their stamp on it. They tweak things just a little bit. We're going to change the look of this character. We're going to change 2 characters' voices. We're going to do this, and we're going to do that. I'm afraid that, you know, whether it be 4 weeks after TV, 13 weeks after TV, or whatever it is, it's like, oh, we're going to add this little thing to Orange Cassidy. It's not going to make Orange Cassidy anymore. We're going to add this other little thing, because, like, you know, we really need to have my feel on it. He still feels like an indie character. We need this to make him feel more big league, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's in the back of my head. I hope that goes away. But going back to the way that AEW kind of plays fast and loose with debuts and things like that, Adam, I want to ask you a question. What is Kenny Omega's singles record in AEW?
I know he hasn't won. So I think he went into the pay-per-view like 0-2, so like 0-3 now.
Mm.
Somewhere around there.
Well, that's what they tell us. But if I remember things, and I do, he beat Seema at Fight for the Fallen.
Okay.
But they've retconned that to being an exhibition match that does not count toward the standings that we don't see.
Uh-huh. Well, that's stupid.
Right. That's stupid. Just want to throw that out there. Because I'm watching the match, and they're like, hasn't won in AEW. And I'm like, they won that multi-man match and he beat Seema. And then later in the match, they say that the match with Seema, it was an exhibition match. And I'm like, they never said that before. Like, you can't play, if you're going to claim that you're a pure sports build and wins and losses matter, to further a storyline to say that one of your big guys is winless in singles action, you can't just say like, yeah, this match didn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I give you a debut and a pre-show didn't happen. You can't say matches didn't happen.
No, I can see that. Mm-hmm. I completely erased that Seema match from my mind. I don't know what happened.
Right.
Oh, well. But other than, obviously, Orange Cassidy being a superstar and the entire brand should be built around him, other than that, some quick thoughts about the pay-per-view. Luchasaurus, fucking badass. They did a star-making turn on him that night.
Absolutely. I thought that match was great. Now, as the show began, I almost felt as though, for the first half of the show, I'm like, yeah, the wrong people went over in that match. Yeah, the wrong people went over in that match. The wrong people went over that match. But then it got to like the second half with the women's match. And I'm like, okay, the course is kind of correcting itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, Marco Stunt to win. But that's okay that they didn't win because, as you mentioned, Luchasaurus had a star-making performance. I eagerly await the main event of, because the Chicago show, All In, All Out, whatever they're going to call it, is, I guess, going to be their WrestleMania going forward.
Mm-hmm.
I want the main event of that show to be for the title, Orange Cassidy versus Luchasaurus. Start the build now.
All right. I'm down for it.
But like I said, this was a great match. And like I said, I didn't watch the buy-in, but you could have very easily swapped the Private Party match and this match. Like, put this match on the buy-in. You get to see an established act, a new act that you're pushing, and something unique. And like I said, it's not like I'm like, oh, they did something wrong. But I feel as though whoever you put the SoCal Uncensored guys against, that's a good position to put on the buy-in because they don't have bad matches.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be able to showcase, whether it be them or whoever that they're facing, in any combination, you put that on your free show, that's going to be more enticing to people to tune in than, you know, whatever the fuck they do with the Librarians or Jabali versus Michael Nakazawa or shit like that. That, like, actively turns people off from your product.
Gotcha. I think, aside from the Orange Cassidy spot, which was by far my favorite moment of the night, my two favorite matches were Pac versus Omega. And in what I think might have been one of your favorite matches, because the Bucks got fucking murdered, which was the Lucha Brothers versus the Young Bucks, which I did say I wasn't expecting to like, because I'm sick of the fucking that matchup over and over and over again. But it was practically a snuff film where the Bucks were the victims. So I did enjoy a lot of that. But I'm interested to hear what your opinion was of that car crash.
So just the other match, I thought Pac versus Kenny was okay. I still can't get into Pac. I know everyone else is sold on him. I'm not. And I know everybody else is sold on Kenny. I'm not. So this was a match that was just kind of there. I had no emotional investment in the match.
Okay.
It was fine. Lucha Brothers versus Young Bucks. I watched a Young Bucks match. Now, I missed the first five. Like, I missed the promo video, the entrances, and the first 5 minutes because I was watching a video of Broski open up toys in his pool. But the last 3 minutes of the match was very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of it felt like them just kind of going through the motions. And there felt like no emotion in any of the stuff that they did. And I'm sure all this stuff looked really cool when they went and they did the rehearsal early in the afternoon. But it just felt like guys doing things. Bald Jackson taking that killer spill on the dive was very scary. And I thought the spot where they're both climbing up the ladder, Matt Jackson and Pentagon are climbing up, and Matt pulls Pentagon's mask off. I thought that was an awesome spot.
Mm-hmm.
Could have been the finish. Fine that it wasn't. But as you mentioned, you've seen more of these matches because you watch Young Buck matches on purpose. This just had, no emotional attachment for me. It was just guys doing stuff
mm-hmm.
for really no reason.
I got you. I think that, like you said, I have in the past sought out Bucks matches, and I apologize on a daily basis for that. But this, where, like I said, going into this, I was not expecting to like it. I did enjoy the pacing of it. I did enjoy the story, and it was just a stiff match compared to what I've been seeing on NXT and WWE and ladder matches. It was it was enjoyable for me. So I'm glad you watched it, and the fact that you didn't completely shit on it, I think is it's showing growth, Joe.
Yeah, yeah. I showed a little bit of empathy when the bald buck almost died. You know.
Yeah. But I guess that would move us on, unless there's anything in the undercard you want to talk about the physical, just fucking dominant performance by Chris Jericho over Adam Page.
We'll get there. We'll get there. So just want to say, I liked the Cracker Barrel Clash match. It was fun. It was kind of like sanitized deathmatch wrestling.
Yeah.
Everything looked super well. Okay. Everything for the most part looked super safe. The paper cut spot, the tacks in the mouth, Janela doing the monkey flip and landing on the chair. You had your two big spots at the end where Janela, for no reason, just did a moonsault to the floor, and Darby did the backsplash coffin drop with the barrel on his back. My only two nitpicks about the match is, I felt as though the barrels could have been made of a more sturdy material. They seemed as though they were made of tissue paper and balsa wood, but balsa wood that had been left out in the rain. So it was real super flimsy, But they still made for cool visuals. And I wish there was a third barrel that someone popped out of as like a surprise entrant or a run-in or something. And I understand why they didn't, because they were doing the surprise debut of Orange Cassidy in the next match. But anytime anyone debuts coming out of a barrel, they're instantly over.
You know how when WWE first started doing the hardcore matches, like, and it was a playoff of like ECW, but it was all like just pie trays that were made out of like aluminum foil as opposed to stop signs, and everything was just watered down.
Yeah.
That's kind of what this was in the world of death matches. You know, like, I'm obviously not a death match connoisseur. I will not watch them unless forced to do so. But based on the very little that I have seen, then going and seeing this AEW match, this is the WWE version of a hardcore match.
Yeah.
So.
And that's fine. Like I said, they're not going to do like the crazy stuff that you see on like indie or Japanese death matches on TNT. But this was kind of like, hey, we've got a big sponsor, you know, hey, TNT, are you okay with us doing this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they kind of have like a demo reel, like, how about this? How about this? And they can like make a list of like, okay and not okay sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, if it wasn't for the fact that this week's show image was already in the can, I was going to do a Cracker Barrel, like a barrel with our logo on it.
Well, I already have what my idea for the show image is going to be, but we're not even there yet. So,
yeah.
Cody versus Ty Dillinger.
Mm-hmm.
The three-star general is back, being that after having one five-star match with his brother, where they got to have tons and tons of blood, and the match that he had with Darby Allin that was ruined by the stupid miss on the body bag and the fucked up chair spot. This was a perfectly acceptable WWE style main event matchup, which is what Cody is good at. Cody's a very good actor, and he's very good at pretending to be a sports entertainer. Ty Dillinger has lived in the WWE system since 2005, so that's pretty much all he knows, except having spooky contacts. But again, a match with a promotion that is building itself on a pure sports build, and I understand that this is a grudge match, but we get multiple referee distraction spots, we get a whole thing of who's going to be in Cody's corner, we get a run-in from Arn Anderson, which was badass as hell, and we get the finish being a chair held 6 feet out in front of Ty Dillinger's head while Cody kicked in the general vicinity of the chair. Be that as it may, this was one of two matches on the show that actually had emotion in it. So that alone, I give a bit of a nod, even though Cody and Brandy seem to hate their dog.
Yeah, that was fucked up. The fucking pyro going off 5 feet in front of the dog. Dog right. Was terrified, and they just kept on proceeding to try to drag him out there.
Yep.
Call an audible at that point. You know, don't have to bring the dog out.
Okay. So you don't delve this deep into Twitter like I do, okay?
Are you going to talk about the service animal fiasco?
Yes.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Okay. So, the having your dog, people need service animals, and I understand that. There are people who abuse that privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Cody has some sort of mental issue, or he has some sort of whatever it is. The dog ended up getting a service vest and getting on the plane. At the end of the day, I don't give a shit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a pet person. I've been on a plane 3 times in my entire life. I don't give a shit. There were a lot of other people on Twitter that did, and they went way too overboard, and they made a way bigger deal out of it than they needed to. And it caught them a whole bunch of unnecessary flack. And this was before Saturday even happened. Then on Saturday, when they do the whole thing with the dog, and the dog gets scared shitless because they're setting up goddamn mortar shells 5 feet away from the dog, and Cody and Brandy, not only at the time, show no empathy for the dog that they care so much about that they have to fly with, and then when people were questioning Cody about it, he goes, yeah, you know, the mortars weren't supposed to go out. Pharaoh's okay. He'll be at the meet and greets today, so everyone get a picture with him. Which is it?
Mm-hmm.
Everything Cody says and does gets a little bit tinge more of dishonesty as he becomes more and more and more. I ended up watching his Q&A thing that he did Thursday night as part of StarCast.
Mm-hmm.
And he just freely admits during the course of this, and there's another story that we'll get to a little bit later on as well that I love, but he freely admit that they're making him take, I forget what he specifically said, but like business ethic classes because he doesn't know how to text people and he doesn't know what contract tampering means. And just freely admits this. And then when they're talking about Tony Schiavone, he looks in the camera and says, Bruce Pritchard, I know you're watching. We got him before you did. And then talks about how Tony Schiavone had a contract with MLW, which is suspect in and of itself. I think it's the same contract that you and I have with each other to do the show. But like, they just have Tony Schiavone in the last show doing like pre-tapes while he's under contract with another company. So Cody seems to be a little shady as a business person, maybe as a person. Again, the three-star general is back with his matches.
Yeah, I saw initially the first tweet of Cody, you know, tweeting out having his dog on the plane. And I've seen him drag that dog as a prop to many things in the past to sell T-shirts and whatnot.
And that's fine. You want to use the image of your dog, and they do good stuff with the charity and all that other stuff. And that's fine. And the dog and taking your dog on the plane, that's fine. But when you put your dog in inherent danger and you give zero shits about it, it kind of shines a light on all the other stuff that you do.
I agree. But you know where we would not have had this problem, Joe? Is if instead of the dog, we had the business bear. Business bears don't freak out over pyro.
Yeah.
They're able to fly without a service vest.
Anyway. So the last thing that I want to say about this, and I know I've been busy on Twitter talking about wrestling shit all this week, but this is the one that I saved for myself. I want to float a rumor that much like back in the 90s when there was multiple Ultimate Warriors, that there's been multiple Pharaohs that we're on at least our third or fourth Pharaoh, and Cody just keeps acting like it's the same one, that there's been a bunch of horrible incidents with the dog. It's and like, Cody's like, no, everything's fine. This is the same Pharaoh that's always been.
Like Snowball number two, like that type of thing. All right.
It's more Principal Skinner, Armin Tanzarian sort of thing.
All right.
Where the original Pharaoh got run. He got too old and he couldn't be frisky. Or he didn't want to pose for pictures for T-shirts or whatever the hell it is. So they just went and got a new Pharaoh.
I like it. Whatever I can do to throw the weight of my social media empire behind that, let me know.
Right. Hey, what are you going to mention on the podcast? We'll see if it gets picked up. this is the other thing. There was a bunch of other shit that was going on as well, like the Kylie Rae stuff that went on, like her asking for her release and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to say what happened, but yeah. If you ask me, I'll tell you. But I'm just going to say it here.
Yeah, it's like, obviously, Joe and I had a discussion about this a couple weeks ago, and I knew enough to keep this to myself. And then when you hear a little bit of stuff coming out over this past week, and I'm just like, yeah, I knew that. I knew that. I know Joe. I knew that. So hit up Joe. Hit us up with the Patreon, and Joe will stooge the stuff off to you.
And like Adam said at the beginning of the show, like he's like, oh, I find it suspect that you didn't know the Orange Cassidy thing was going to happen. I knew Orange Cassidy was there. I don't know if you saw some of his interviews on the press junket.
No.
They're exactly how you would expect an Orange Cassidy press junket to go. And I bring up the press junket while we're talking about Kylie Rae. But I'm just saying. Yeah. So Riho versus Hikaru Shida. Shida, I'm mispronouncing that. I apologize. Good match. Crowd didn't seem to care all that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's setting up Riho versus Nyla Rose at the first TV, which is in Nyla Rose's hometown. It's certainly positioned as though Nyla Rose is going to win and be the first champion. I would not be surprised to see Riho win the title, only because that's Kenny's pick to win it. Kenny's girlfriend. You know, we'll see, though. It's up in the air. But like I said, the match was really good. It just the crowd didn't seem to care.
And I find another thing about like this show, like I know I bitched about this during the last AEW pay-per-view. Like I complained before about the show feeling too long.
Oh yes, forget about it. This show was way too long.
This show, like, yeah, it I know that this not really any longer than your average WWE pay-per-view, but it just feels longer. Yes. And maybe it's because every match is like 15 to 18 minutes long.
Right.
You know? So
on Jericho's podcast today, he said that Pac and Kenny Omega's match, first of all, which Jericho said he knows was awesome, even though he didn't watch it, he just heard it. that he said that they were all upset because their match got cut for time. Their match went 23 minutes.
Yeah.
Got cut. It was supposed to be longer, everyone. According to Chris Jericho, and his trustworthiness is suspect at best, but we'll get to... There's so much more to talk about. It's such a big show.
Yeah.
We didn't... Oh, and this is the other thing. I want to just throw this out there. The MJF stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So everything's certainly positioned that it looks like MJF is going to turn on Cody, right?
Uh-huh.
In that interview that Cody gave on Thursday, where he was talking about all the other stuff, he brings up MJF, claims that MJF is his best friend. People boo. And Cody says, I quote, "Oh, come on, MJF. He's a baby face." And he says it just like that. And I'm like, okay, I get this is where the storyline is going. But if that's where this is going, you can't have MJF at the StarCast events making fun of handicapped people to their faces.
Mm.
And I understand that in the real world, you may have a friend who is a big jerk to everyone else, but you and him are super cool and you see the good in him that nobody else sees. Stop having him be such an outward dick.
So that's like Todd for us.
Maybe dial it back. Instead of having him being like a 10 on the dick scale, let's go 7.
Mm-hmm.
So that when you continually tell us he's a babyface, you present him on TV as a heel, he acts like a heel in private interactions with fans, and then you don't understand why he's not getting over as a babyface. Dial it back just a smidge.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm confused as to whether Cody's a babyface or a heel at this point anyways. It fluctuates from week to week.
Well, and that's the thing. Show. Cody will tell you that there's no such things as heels and babyfaces. Those are outdated terms.
Yes, but Cody's a liar. We've already established this.
Right, but we already established that Cody is a liar. He's full of shit, and... Mm-hmm. Everybody else who speaks into a microphone publicly about AEW, from Chris Jericho to Jim Ross to the Young Bucks to Brandi Rhodes to Dave Meltzer, all say baby faces and heels. Oh, this person's the heel in the match. That person's the baby face in the match. So everybody kind of needs to get on the same page.
Mm-hmm. Are you saying that that not everybody knows what the hell is going on in AEW?
It seems as though you've got... you know, this is the too many cooks sort of thing. Like, mm-hmm. It's very public knowledge that the tag team stuff is the Bucks. The singles program stuff is Cody. The women's stuff is Kenny. And then you've got Jericho in there, putting his 2 cents in. You've got Jim Ross, putting his 2 cents in there. You got Brandi Rhodes, putting her 2 cents in there. And then you've got Tony Khan, who's supposed to be the one making all the decisions, being pulled in no less than 3 to 6 different ways.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure everything will work out.
They got 4 weeks to figure it out.
Yeah. Well, at least there weren't any production issues during the pay-per-view. So
there was tons of production issues during the pay-per-view. Like when they put Jimmy Havoc's Chiron up over Darby Allin, all the missed shots and just poor camera work and stuff. But that's stuff that they could work on. That's stuff that they could figure out.
You know, if they stole
all of Ring of Honor's infrastructure when they did All In last year, maybe they'd be a little bit better going.
Mm-hmm. I've never actually seen on like a wrestling show where they show a crowd reaction and they stick with the person long enough for them to see themselves on the giant screen and then react.
Right. They close up on a person who's mm-hmm. not reacting. And then it's like a 3 Mississippi before the person realizes that they're on the screen and then reacts not to what the amazing thing we just saw in the ring is,
yeah.
but to them being on the big screen.
It's like a kiss cam at a baseball game.
Uh-huh.
You know? It just felt weird. They kept doing it. And it was like, I've never seen this type of like crowd reaction or attempt at a crowd reaction before.
Right.
Oh, well.
So now it's the main event for the title, unless there's anything else you wanted to cover from the rest of the show.
No, no, you're good. Orange Cassidy.
The main event of the show is going to lead us to the main event of our show today.
Go ahead.
For the AEW World Championship, Hangman Adam Page accompanied the ring by Hunter Horse Helmsley. Takes on the Painmaker himself, the Judas in my mind, Chris Jericho.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I want to say I like this match.
What?
For as bad as Chris Jericho has looked physically, this has been his best AEW outing to date. Taking into consideration him not attempting and botching and killing someone on a lion salt, him still doing the Judas Effect elbow in a bucket of molasses, him right on camera being handed the blade by the referee and then rolling to the outside and then close up on camera hitting the cut and rubbing the blood into his eye. If you take all of those things out of the equation, I thought this was not only a really good performance, but also the first time that I cared about an Adam Page anything. Adam Page had a lame match that went too long with Sammy Guevara. He was the Joker's card in the Battle Royal, and I don't watch any of the dumb YouTube shows, so I don't get to see any of these promos and stuff, but this was the first time that I cared about Adam Page, and this is the first time that I was actually impressed by his in-ring ability. I thought him and Jericho worked really well together.
Mm-hmm. I think this was definitely his best match on AEW. I also have not been that impressed with what he's done in the last year. He was always used in Ring of Honor with the Bucks, kind of like the Roman Reigns of the Shield. You know, like he was used as the heavy, and it was kind of protecting a lot of his, his opportunities. So, like, when we see him getting the push over the last year as, like, the guy, it definitely didn't do him well. But, yeah, this match, he did come off more big time. And, obviously, the AEW crowd loves him to start with. But Jericho did a good job, to his credit, to his fat, disgusting credit, of making a great match out of it.
Now, I want to point this out. There's other people out there that have mentioned about Jim Ross specifically going out of his way to not hurt his legacy and not call certain things. Kind of just to go silent, right?
Okay.
Now, one of the big ones was when Orange Cassidy makes his debut. He just keeps saying, "Who is he? Who is he? Who is he?" He just kept saying it until Excalibur finally said, "He is Chuck Taylor's other best friend, a training partner from their days competing in Philadelphia. Someone who knows he and Trent very well." And then Jim Ross stopped. So if you go back and you watch the Orange Cassidy debut, as I have done many times, Jim Ross just keeps repeating, "Well, who is he? Well, who is he? Well, who is he?"
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that. Also during the Cracker Barrel Clash match, when Darby Allin does the spot with the thumbtack skateboard, Excalibur puts him over and says, "Oh, you know, Darby Allin was a competitive pro skateboarder." And JR says, "Oh, I toyed with being a competitive skateboarder myself." That's a good line, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do those things hurt Jim Ross's legacy more, or him calling maybe the sillier parts of the show more than saying to people watching at home that have eyes that this is the best shape Chris Jericho has been in since the 90s. What hurts Jim Ross's credibility more?
Oh, I literally have that written down here.
If this was Final Wrestling Place, we'd put it to a poll, but I don't need to know no poll. But yeah, him outright lying about the physical condition of your main eventer, your world champion, I think it takes more away from your credibility than making a joke about being a competitive skateboarder or acknowledging bullshit matches in a garbage match or acknowledging who Orange Cassidy is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he also, during the boy and a dinosaur match, kept calling Jungle Boy Jungle Jack. Had to call him that at least 9 times.
Yeah, and you know what though? That's a Jericho thing as well. Like, I think like those older types are really big on going away from the Jungle Boy thing and going more to Jungle Jack or Jack Perry or whatever it is.
Yeah. But yeah, I did catch him asking, you know, who is it to about Orange Cassidy. So fuck your show of disrespect, Jim Ross. But yeah, back to Jericho and just how great he looked.
Okay. So that being said, the one thing that I asked Adam to watch, which maybe he saw GIFs of online, maybe he did, maybe he didn't, was Jericho's backstage celebration as the champion. So he comes through the curtain, and the Bucks are there, and he starts harassing the Bucks, giving them a bunch of shit. Then there's a bunch of people that were just backstage, from Brian Pillman Jr., who's under MLW contract, to Lenny Leonard, who I think works for Evolve and therefore World Wrestling Entertainment. And he just starts making fun of people. What's wrong with your hair? What's, you know, look at your hair. Look at you. What are you going to do, librarian? Shush me? Shush me? Why don't you shut up? Scorpio Sky, you're never getting a shot at this title. This person, you're never getting a shot at this title. I don't need anyone. I was an only child. I could party by myself. So he goes into his locker room, which is already tarped up for some reason. I'm not really sure. And in there is a lame, like, deli platter. And then Jericho starts critiquing the olives that are on the deli platter, and then starts throwing the little salami slices around, and then takes a bottle of champagne and says, "Oh, a little taste of the bubbly," which is a big meme now of him saying that. So then we cut to a little bit of a recap. We cut to some interviews. We cut to some whatevers, building up to Adam Page and Pac. We get Orange Cassidy with the Best Friends promo, kind of setting their relationship up. And then we go back to Jericho, who's being presented the belt by someone who we're not interested to. And then Jericho just takes two bottles of champagne, shakes them up individually, not at the same time, shakes them up individually, holds them in his groin area, and just douses this guy with champagne.
This sounds great, Joe. Why don't you tell me about this?
So, I have now turned a corner on Chris Jericho. No longer will he be referred to as the bloated corpse of Chris Jericho. I don't care what he physically looks like, as long as he's doing bullshit like this, and some of the other stuff that we're going to talk about here in a little bit as well.
See, I don't know if you can just offhand just dismiss the bloated corpse moniker. I mean, that's kind of like a show decision, and my 46% of this show interest might have to veto it.
You can call him what you will.
Okay.
I will call him not only the oldest, but also the youngest AEW champion of all time.
Longest reigning AEW champion.
Longest reigning? Least bloated corpse-ish?
the most powerful and high-flying?
Yes, yes.
All right, I like it.
All
right.
So, all this, that's the pay-per-view. Now we get to the real aftermath of the pay-per-view. So Tuesday afternoon, a story goes out online that there was a police report filed in the Tallahassee area that the AEW title was stolen. See, the original police report says that Chris Jericho was picked up by a limo at the airport, grabbed what he thought was his bag. The limo took him to Longhorn Steakhouse. Then Chris Jericho realized he had the wrong bag, had the limo take him back to the airport where his actual bag was no longer there. That's what the police report said. Now, I think this might be all fabricated. You know what I mean? Like, maybe this is someone like, oh, Jericho's out of control. Jericho's a mess. He's a boozer. He's a crazy cokehead, allegedly. There's no way this could happen. And then there's people calling the police department. There's more confirmation of the story coming out. Then we get people in AEW commenting on the story. Then we get Jericho releasing the video from the hot tub saying that he doesn't know who stole the title, but he is launching a worldwide investigation to find the title. That's day one. Any comments you want to make on that before we move on to day two?
I honestly thought it was a work at first as well. just because of just how shoddy like the police like report seemed, like how loose everything seemed. And then Jericho, you would think that Jericho would be radio silent or after losing like a $30,000 belt allegedly, you know?
Yes.
But he was steering into that mistake. He was fine with it, but go ahead.
Well, no, listen, I'm taking Chris Jericho at his word.
You're he Chris Jericho the... Mark now. I don't like this.
Well, wait. There's two people you can't lie to, Adam. You can't lie to your doctor, which is why I don't see to them. And you can't lie to the police. That's why I try to stay away from the police. Mm-hmm.
You know, I went and got blocked by Chris Jericho for you, and now you're doing a 180.
I'm sure I'm blocked by him now, too, for all the remarks that I made, okay?
Alright.
So, then, early this morning, around 9 o'clock, whatever the police department where this happened, posts a picture of one of the cops holding the belt, saying that they found the belt. And then they quickly delete that post from their Facebook page, saying that we had to delete this because the case is still pending. Even though they have the belt in their possession. Mm-hmm. The police later release a statement that the belt, valued at $30,000, was left on their doorstep by someone who found it on the side of the road. On the side of the road, closer to the Longhorn Steakhouse than to the airport.
Are you implying that Jericho may have been wearing it as he stumbled out of the Longhorn Steakhouse?
I'm just saying I saw people saying that this week or this month or, you know, like this week at Longhorn Steakhouses nationwide, they're having a $4.99 Jack and Coke special. Maybe a little bit less Jack, a little bit more Jack, a little less Coke, maybe a little bit more Spectrox, maybe
something
else.
Different kind of Coke.
I think what happened was Chris Jericho in an altered state either left the belt at Longhorn Steakhouse or in his ride to or from the airport, he was hanging out the limo. Maybe he fell out of the limo. Maybe he dropped the belt out of the limo. I think there's more to this than meets the eye.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why I love this. I love wild and out of control people because I am not a wild and out of control person. To see someone like Chris Jericho just being like so blatantly unabashed about all the horrible things that he does makes me long to the days back when those people that I talked about on the 605 Boomer podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That wrestling stopped being good in 1989 and everything else since has been terrible. That this harkens back to those times where wrestlers were out of control and being madmen. And you never knew what they were going to do next. Chris Jericho embodies that. And that's who AEW has chose to represent them going on to national TV up against the World Wrestling Entertainment.
Fair enough. Let me ask you this.
The greatest thing that ever happened to the world of professional wrestling. I can't wait.
Let's say you are just walking down the street, you know, as you're known to do, middle of the night, not a soul in sight, and you look down on the ground and you see the AEW World Championship. What do you do with it, Joe?
Am I a wrestling fan or not a wrestling fan?
You are Joe Sposto.
Okay. So I pick that belt up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I would assume, because there's a lot of pieces that are still missing from this story, okay?
All right, well, let me specify.
No, because Jericho claims in a police report that he grabbed the wrong bag.
Mm-hmm.
That wrong bag belongs to someone. We need to know who that person is. Or is that a lie? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And again, there's a lot of variables, and I know that you're asking for a more specific answer, but my brain can't process that. If I found it on the road, I wouldn't touch it first. I would take a picture of it. Okay?
Why wouldn't you touch it?
Okay. Wouldn't touch it. I would take a picture of it, and then I would tweet that picture out. Okay? Uh-huh. And then I would see what sort of traction that I get on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, based on that, I would say, hey, I am near X. I found this on the side of the road. And tag AEW in it and say, do you want me to come and pick up your property so that there's a paper trail?
Mm-hmm.
A digital paper trail, but a paper trail nonetheless. So that I am not accused of stealing this belt. Because once I touch that, not only do I possibly have Spectrox on my hands, my fingerprints are now on what has been reported as stolen merchandise. Because okay. That's where time comes in. Because if you're saying that it's me, I knew this was going on.
But what I'm saying, like, so if nobody's around, there's no cameras, there's nobody with you, there's no chance of you being spotted picking that up, you're going the full honest tweeting out saying, look what
yes,
I found.
Absolutely.
I think that thing's hanging over my mantle for the rest of my life.
That's the difference between you and I, my good man.
I'd have to get everybody sworn to secrecy before they come in. Well, that's the problem, is I don't know any fences, you know, like anybody on the dark web. You might know a bunch of people like those shifty Chikara guys because they all wear masks. So, like, there's probably one or two of them that can help liquidate that belt. But, yeah, I don't know, man. I might keep that and then do the whole thing like you said where, you know, maybe a year later be like, look what I got. I bought it at, like, a swap meet or something, and now I want to get my 5 minutes of fame by, like, returning it finally to Cody and all. You know?
That's too hot of an item. That's, you know what I mean? There's too much going on. It's too soon to be a replica belt. And again, I know this, again, because you're saying that it's me. As part of that Cody interview, he talks about them getting the belt made. Mm-hmm. And they went through non-AEW employee, I don't know if you can see me winking into the microphone, Conrad Thompson, who went through his belt guy, Dave Milliken, and had the belt made. And Cody's like, all right, that's great. And they paid a princely sum to have that belt made. But then they had to pay a whole bunch of money for ownership rights, licensing rights, publishing rights, replication rights. And then the belt ended up being almost double what they had originally paid.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're Joe Schmo Indy and you get a belt made, a lot of times your belt that you're getting made is an old U.S. title that you're just slapping a sticker on. But if you go through the trouble of having, like, an original belt made from scratch, you make the belt and you're like a local Joe Schmo Indie.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're someone who has, like, a TV product that you might be doing, like, video games, toys, replica belts, all sorts of other marketing of that, you need to now get from the person who created the belt, the artist, technically, mm-hmm. and get them to sign off on those replication rights. Get those to sign off on the licensing rights and the merchandising rights and all those other things. Because if you don't, then you're just going to have to pay that person in perpetuity for the rest of the time that you continue to market that belt.
Mm. It's almost like they should have thought of that before they unveiled it or contracted out the designer or something like that.
Yeah, you would think you would do that. You think they would be a little bit more on the ball to do something like that. Yeah.
It's the growing thing.
I'm speaking high-pitched voice now.
They should have, you know what? You should be the fifth executive vice president of the company.
Mm-hmm. Now, I just want to throw this out there as we're recording the show. Unrelated, in the Hurricane Dorian news, and I don't know how close this is to the Longhorn Steakhouse or the world with the belt was lost, but bricks of cocaine washed up on Florida beaches near Cocoa Beach, 15 bricks in all. Again, I don't know if that's related or unrelated to this missing belt story, but I just saw it come across my news feed, and I'm just mentioning it. That's all.
Jericho's beach house is nowhere to be found, I guess.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm a little sad that this show is now not 100% anti-Chris Jericho. I started off loving Chris Jericho, made a right turn over to hating on him, and then you went to the other side. So,
listen, something could happen between now and the next recording that he does and shits on all of this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you're not welcome back.
Listen, he is the pain maker. He is the Judas in my mind. Oh. He is the AEW champion, whether he has the belt or not.
My favorite tweet out of all of it, and I know you absolutely didn't see it because you don't follow them, but one of the stupid bucks tweeted out, like, immediately after it was stolen, it just said, oh, for fuck's sake, like the FFS,
yeah.
Which was, I thought, summed it up pretty well.
And Cody just said, I prefer Outback Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, hey, there was other wrestling this week.
Yeah.
So Raw and SmackDown.
My brackets are destroyed.
Yes, the King of the Ring brackets are for me as well destroyed. But I'm okay with that because on 4 or 5 hours of World Wrestling Entertainment mainstream TV, we got no less than 4 really good matches. Mm-hmm. And Baron Corbin was even in one of them.
Yeah, you know what? I'm coming around a little bit on Baron Corbin. I'm going to say, just to be safe right now, he's definitely better than Randy Orton. He's like a young, better Randy Orton. I don't hate him as much as I hated him like with WrestleMania season when they were pushing him over Kurt Angle. I do like him about 5% more than I did then. But yeah, I'm not anti-Baron Corbin, and I know on Twitter some folks were saying that they can see him winning the whole thing. And I would not be shocked now that all my picks are down the drain.
Yeah, I could see it being Corbin winning at this point. I never really hated Corbin. I just didn't care for him. I felt he was miscast in the role that he was in. Mm. And he really wasn't put in a position to have good matches. He was just kind of put in a position to be like a big giant goon.
Yeah.
And there had been a whole internet culture kind of amongst like super smart fans to kind of bury him out of the gate because I guess maybe in developmental he was a bit of a jerk to a couple people.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think he's come into his own as a cocky, unlikable heel, which there are very few of in the world of sports and entertainment.
Yeah. And as far as the other King of the Ring matches that were on there, I mean, obviously the first thing that I thought screwed my bracket up was Samoa Joe and Ricochet. Just that, the weird ass finish where they're like, the ref, the very sassy ref, by the way, was like, you'll get our ruling eventually. And I mean, that was kind of weird. Now we're going to have a triple threat between Joe, Ricochet, and Baron Corbin next week.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting choice to make. I feel as though that's being set up to not hurt someone, if that makes any sense.
Okay. To basically have like whoever they deem, I don't know, either invulnerable or, you know, where they don't have immediate plans, have them take the pin. So, you know, the other guy still goes over, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like if you want to protect Ricochet and have Samoa Joe win, have Joe beat Corbin or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Okay. All right. Any other King of the Ring talk? Is there some other things I want to mention?
I thought, like I said, Gable Andrade was a really good match. Very surprising to see Gable go over. Mm-hmm. And, you know, your story really looks like it's going to be Corbin, who is the epitome of a big, giant bully, taking on someone who is made fun of for being short.
Yeah. Maybe Gable wins.
Wouldn't surprise me if it was the finals at this point.
Yeah. I mean, SmackDown completely threw me for a loop because Andrade and Ali were my two favorites for this whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
They both lost to guys that, in the case of Elias, doesn't really need the King moniker. And in the case of Gable, like, I did not see them pushing him, you know?
Right. Mm. But hey, man, like I said, I like being surprised. I like not knowing what's going to go on in wrestling.
Have you had a chance to take a look at the submissions for the DVD to see like if we still have some people that are alive?
I can look at them right now as we're speaking.
Yeah, because I know I'm sure, you know, there were some people that probably picked Corbin. I doubt there's very many people to pick Gable or Elias, you know? I think you're going to have a lot of Ricochets, some Joes, some Corbins. But the smart people out there probably took Andrade or Ali like me, me and you. So they might be gone. That might have devastated the brackets.
Well, at this point, it appears as though there is one clear-cut winner.
Well, I mean, there can't be a winner because we don't know who won the thing.
Well, there's one per... Okay.
Because there could be somebody who's still alive, but then,
okay,
you know, they pick Gable, but then if Elias wins, then technically nobody won.
I will say there is currently one who is clear-cut to win.
Okay. We'll keep that under our hats until later, but yes. I'm just curious as far as where we were going with that.
Yes.
All right. I was hoping nobody would win, and then we can split the DVD amongst ourselves.
Oh, well, I have two, you know?
Oh, there we go.
I purchased two in the event that there was a tie.
Uh-huh.
But then I also said, I'm like, well, if there's not a tie, then I have a DVD of a show that I did commentary on this year, so.
There you go. All right. I want to throw out a real quick thing regarding the opener of Raw, if I may.
Okay.
And that was the little segment with AJ Styles, the club versus Rollins and Strowman. And then you had Roode and Ziggler run out there and get involved in it.
Right.
Obviously, Roode and Ziggler have been kind of rudderless for the past year, you know, start and stops on both of them.
Okay.
Why not just friggin' have, you know, the OC throwing up the two sweet and have Ziggler and Roode get involved in that? You know, even if it's not a long-term thing, because obviously the club is a parody or a spiritual successor of DX, which is a successor of NWO, and like people join those groups, you know, come and go. So, I mean, give Roode and Ziggler some credibility as being part of that stable, even if it's just for a couple months until, like, you know, Ziggler gets like a Starscream element to him where he's the leader and wants to overtake AJ, and you could have some dissension in that respect. But they clearly have nothing better to do. Why not put them in the OC?
Well, I'll say this. Let's not muddy the waters of the OC being a thing already more than they are. Mm-hmm. I don't see anyone getting over. And adding Bob Roode and Dolph Ziggler to the OC was like when they added VK Wall Street and Virgil to the NWO.
I disagree. I mean, they still, for better or worse, they both have name recognition. You have two former world champs, you know, whether you count NXT or TNA or whatever, for Bobby Roode. But you're not adding, it's not like you're throwing in, you know, fucking Drake Maverick into the group. You know, there's still right. Something to be said about taking Dolph Ziggler was in the main event storyline like 6 months ago with Drew McIntyre, you know, so it's not like these guys are just like jobbers. They're just mid-card or to upper mid-card potential guys that really have nothing to do. So I'm just in the mindset that the only thing better than a heel stable is a dominant heel stable with a bunch of guys. So I think it would make everybody stronger. That's just my take.
Right. Agree to disagree on that one. I don't know how much more strong you could look than beating Hawkins and Broski in a tag team match. this is the other thing. So this is 2 weeks in a row that Hawkins and Broski have wrestled on Raw, and they do their tag team finisher, the Long Island Expressway, and the commentators don't call it. And listen, as a professional wrestling commentator, I'm not one much who cares about calling names of moves, but it's Hawkins and Broski. They have a tag team finisher, and it has a name. Call it the name. Come on, give them a break.
Yeah, and I will say, I have never in my life purchased any kind of Broski or Hawkins merchandise, because as wrestlers, I haven't been a big enough fan yet of them. However, as a fan of their podcast, I was at the mall the other day and I picked up a Broski Funko Pop.
Oh, there you go.
It was on deep, deep clearance. So I grabbed it. I grabbed it before it disappeared. But I now have a Broski Pop.
They paid you to take it.
Yes. It was, I think, a New York Comic Con exclusive from last year. And normally those fly off the shelves. But for some reason, the 2018 New York Comic Con is figure is still sitting there, but I now have one, so yay. Other than that, Firefly Funhouse.
I was gonna say, bring that pop over my house. I'll sign it. Stay true for you. That's a spoiler for this week's Major Wrestling Figure Podcast.
You and your early versions of the video, whatever.
Oh, so before we get to the Fiend and the Bray Wyatt, what about that evil Bailey?
Do you remember like a month or two ago when I was saying, you know what, they're going to turn Bailey heel and turn Alexa face, and I was scoffed at.
I laughed
off the podcast, Joe.
Yeah, you're still here. I don't think Alexa could be a heel or a face. She's kind of like, you know, she's Alexa Bliss. She's not heel. She's not face. She's just a character who exists and is over.
I
whether she's a heel or a face.
She
you know
way more a babyface now than she was before. I think it's she's not clearly a face or clearly a heel, but if you have to tell me which way she's leaning more towards now versus like before she had the concussion, it's clear that she's more a babyface now. And even with Bayley, like, she's beating down on people with Sasha Banks with the steel chair. But you can kind of see, like, especially with that promo that she cut against Charlotte, that it's they're maybe trying to make more Becky Lynch's, you know, more badasses that can go either way.
And that's what we talked about here on the show a couple of weeks ago, that Becky's at a point where she's over and, you know, Sasha coming back or, you know, whomever it is, it's time to start using Becky's overness to start making more Beckys.
Mm-hmm.
So that you have, instead of just having one person who the entire division revolves around, and then like everybody else, it's like one person's here, then you get like Alexa Bliss as a floater that she's like kind of over, but she can't have those, you know, extended matches, and then everybody else is kind of lumped in together. You use Becky, you build someone else up, and then now you have two top stars. Then you use those two top stars to make another top star. And then you start building that division up. And I think this is what they're finally doing, and I'm all for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed the use of all of them, Becky and Sasha and whatnot, over the weekend. Or, I'm sorry, over the past few days. So we'll see where it goes. What'd you think of Rowan turning on Daniel Bryan?
I think it's all a clever ruse to get one over on that no good big dog Roman Reigns.
I feel like Roman Reigns is going to be playing the part of like late 80s Sting, you know, where he's just going to be like fooled left and right in this whole storyline.
And that's not a bad place to be. Sting is awesome.
Yeah. But I don't think Rowan on his own, I would not, unless they do something different with him. I don't like him as like a standalone heel, you know, monster heel. He needs to be in a tag team with somebody who's equally awesome. Or the heavy for Daniel Bryan or somebody else.
Yeah, the last aborted singles push of Rowan was culminated in a stairs match at a TLC pay-per-view against the Big Show.
Was that a different gimmick than when he was like the Mensa rocket scientist, like Nobel laureate?
That was kind of like in between.
Okay. I remember they were like, oh, you composed your first concerto, you know, at the age of 6.
He sure did. He sure did.
Yeah. All right.
But hey, The Fiend is back, everybody.
Yay.
And this was a fantastic skit. I loved every minute of it.
Oh, which was better, feeding the demon, like the devil Vince McMahon doll money, or I also enjoyed Rambling Rabbit holding up the help sign, mm-hmm. and Bray quickly like trying to hide it.
There was a lot of layers to this one. You know, the boss, the evil Vince puppet, if you will, being fed the money. But the best part was when the Vince puppet pops up and starts to yell at Bray, and he's about to say those immortal words that the boss says, his catchphrase. Bray kind of just says, in like the comedic character way, he goes, no, 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 boss. Before you say that, I've been making something. And then he turns around and goes, money. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So there's so many layers to that. One, right off the rip, the fact that the character is over, right?
Mm-hmm.
Two, the fact that, you know, that all of his stuff, all of his merch, the Firefly Funhouse box thing sold out very quickly. And number three, Bray Wyatt comes from a long family of counterfeiters.
Oh,
so
really?
For him to say, I've been making money, has so many meanings.
See, I didn't get that. Awesome.
Back in the late 80s, 1989, Barry Windham was in the World Wrestling Entertainment. He was the Widowmaker, and he was being poised for a push to go against Hulk Hogan. Then all of a sudden, November of 1989, Barry Windham disappears from television without a trace because his brother, Kendall Windham, and his father, Blackjack Mulligan, who are all part of the same Windham Rotunda family, were arrested for counterfeiting. And everyone likes to laugh. It's like, oh, ho, ho, counterfeiting. Well, typically when you're counterfeiting, it's because you're dealing in lots and lots of drugs.
Nice.
So with his brother and father in jail, Barry Windham made a hasty exit from television.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, yep, definitely more layers. I enjoyed it. I want more Firefly Funhouse. It's my new favorite thing. Anyways, that's all I got for the WWE.
Yeah, but this was a good week of wrestling. From AEW, from WWE. There was so much other stuff that we didn't get a chance to watch. I heard good things about the GCW Black Label show that happened Friday. That's up currently on independentwrestling.tv. I heard good things about the NXT UK show, whether it be Cesaro's match with Ilya Dragunov and the Walter Tyler Bate match, which I'm going to get to watch eventually. Just, you know, so much time in between now and then because, of course, we need to cover the finals and how we got there for the gender neutral monarch of At Odds with Wrestling.
Yes. Joe, I don't know if you know this, but I pride myself in calling it straight and basically providing an even playing ground for everybody. And a lot of that was called into question this past week by people doubting the legitimacy of the pairings, the scoring, whatever you have you will. I just want to say all I merely did was put out the polls and tried to get them in front of as many people as possible. Now, some might say that I may have brought a certain match to the perspective or to the forefront for a certain group of fans that may have been likely to vote for one person over another. And I call that a bunch of hooey. And on to the results, if you will. Coming out of the Joe Sposto bracket and what was pretty much the landslide of landslides amongst this entire tournament, the newly re-debuted Orange Cassidy defeats Samoa Joe 83% to 17%.
Wow.
That was just a murdering. So I did not expect Joe to get squashed like that.
I'm not surprised. I like some Samoan Joe, but Orange Cassidy is an unstoppable juggernaut, strong style expert, and all that sort of thing.
Okay. And in the Adam Van bracket, initially, I just kind of give you a little bit of the way that this match had its ebb and flows. It started off with Alexa having a little bit of a lead. Then the Boar pulled out, a little bit to the front. And then Alexa just started landing her offense, and Alexa Bliss won 64% to 36%.
Right, so this was one I will honestly say I peeked at as this was going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right around the time that you started soliciting votes from Alexa Bliss fan accounts.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't sound like me at all.
Uh-huh.
But, hey, I'm just going to say, you know what? The Boar fought a good fight. If he really wanted to win this, maybe he should have tried harder. He only lost by like 20 votes.
Her, Sassafras, young white meat baby face Boar, come back. And Bovine University, her.
And I just want to say, Joe, I did not screw the Boar. The Boar screwed the Boar.
Looking to make yourself the heel of the show, huh?
I thought I already established that I was the heel of this show.
Just take your natural personality, Adam. Everybody already hates you.
Exactly.
And put that on TV.
Yep, Mr. McVan.
Mr. The Man Van? What no, is it?
Just McVan. McVan.
Oh, boy.
Anyway.
So we have our final set.
Our finals are set with Alexa Bliss versus Orange Cassidy.
Right. Now, I'm not going to make any sort of impassioned pleas because Adam is just going to work this.
No. I just want to say I am going to post this. And on Alexa Bliss's career, I promise to in no way do anything other than just retweet this out. So
not throw some sort of bullshit in there that like Orange Cassidy's wearing like the Rick and Morty Young Bucks t-shirt from Pro Wrestling Tees or some sort of bullshit like that. Like Alexa Bliss is giving people handfuls of dollar bills.
Nope. Well, everybody knows I do love Alexa Bliss, but I equally and in a platonic way love Orange Cassidy. So I am going to just put this out there. I'm going to do my vote. I might even, because I have two different Twitters that I have control of, I might just do one vote on each one, and that way I'm just not picking one. And I'm going to step away and let you guys decide what you want to do. Just kind of like I did with the Alexa Bliss versus the Boar, because I just put that out there. But this time I'm just going to call it right down the middle. I am not going to interfere. So there will be no last minute timekeeper thrown in or, special guest ring announcer and special referee. This isn't going to be a Stooges and Boss Man and Shamrock coming out. Don't worry. This is Orange Cassidy versus Alexa Bliss. I think I know who's going to win, but I've been surprised before, so I will step back and let this happen.
Only two Twitter accounts, huh? You're a piker.
I don't have access to Words Big 80 like you do.
You're way down in the schedule. Oh, but speaking of schedules, you like that segue? IndependentWrestling.tv, the big return this weekend. Even though they've been doing a bunch of shows at baseball stadiums, and those have been slowly trickling up on IndependentWrestling.tv and Chikaratopia. But this weekend, both on Chikaratopia and IndependentWrestling.tv, is Chikarasaurus Rex, starting at 3 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. 15 matches. Now, keep in mind, I think 3 of the matches are Crucible matches, and if you follow along with what's going on with the Crucible stuff and Ophidian, their matches are consistent to a strict 2-minute time limit, no pinfalls, submit or surrender style rules. So there are going to be 3 of those matches currently unannounced on the event. But looking over this event, so many of my dear, close, personal friends are wrestling on this event. As well as, I don't know who's someone I could shit on and make fun of. Nobody. I like everybody on the show for the most part. Fire Ant taking on Cajun Crawdad, who's a maniac. Missile Assault Man taking on Cobalt on his path to get his mitts one more time on a Hollow Wicked. John Francis of Coronado taking on the third most kayfabe-est motherfucker in the world, Jakob Hammermeyer. Penelope Ford taking on that creep, Blank. Mike Quackenbush on his 25-match tour is taking on Joey Janela, possibly his last match in Chikara. Green Ant against Ophidian for the Johnny Kidd Invitational Finals. The winner of this gets some sort of shot. Now, the other thing about this is both of these men are coming into this contest with enough points for any sort of title contention. You get those 3 wins in a row, you can kind of cash them in for a title shot. Green Ant currently has 4 points. Ophidian, who won the Infinite Gauntlet this year, automatically gets 3 points, so he can kind of do with whatever he wants. So not only is the winner of the Johnny Kidd Invitational on the line, but someone is going to lose their points, possibly. Speaking of points, Mick Moretti is going to be cashing in his points to take on the current Grand Champion, the first time ever seen in public without his mask, Dasher Hatfield. Now, you can head over to Pro Wrestling Ponderings, where our good friend Kevin Ford did a much more extensive detail of everything that's been going on in Chikara for the last 3 months and heading into this. It's a podcast called Viva Chikara, where they want to go through Pro Wrestling Ponderings, PW Ponderings, to find that, or Kevin's blog, which is The Chikara Special. .tumblr.com. Listen to their podcast. It was really good, kind of giving you a rundown of all these matches, and like I said, kind of all the stories leading up to these matches.
I am looking forward to having some more, like, just, I don't want to say regular Chikara, but non, like, minor league baseball stadium Chikara, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get back into it.
Yes, this is kind of like the home stretch toward the season finale. I'm excited. I will not be home, unfortunately. I've got a very busy weekend, but I will be up very late Saturday night watching most of the show and hoping to avoid any and all spoilers coming into this.
Very good.
But hey, if you want to check this event out and you've never checked out IndependentWrestling.tv before, you could use our promo code @odds to get 20 days free. Of course, new subscribers. You'll get this show and like another 2 weeks of shows after this. You'll probably want to stick around because IndependentWrestling.tv puts up tons and tons of great stuff. And I think we're about a month or so away from Uncharted Territory 2 from Beyond Wrestling starting up. And they are announcing some bangers of matches.
Yeah, I must have missed the announcement that they were going for season 2. I know that was maybe briefly in doubt, or maybe I'm just getting worked here. But then I just saw the last few days them announcing some of the guys and gals that are going to be involved in. It's looking like it's going to be interesting. I got to maybe with the move of us going to recording on Thursdays, I'll dedicate the real time to watching Uncharted Territory and then DVR AEW and NXT.
And, you know, there might have been a little snafu with the building. There might have been a little tax evasion going on by the owners of the building that they were going to run at. Mm-hmm. But they did find a new building.
Mm. It was a building opportunity. It was a tax
opportunity. Yeah, it was a tax opportunity, let's say.
Okay, I like it.
And hey, I would be remiss, of course, not to mention soon-to-be-named-network.com. Whether, if you don't have enough wrestling content in your life, of course, every Sunday, Final Wrestling Place comes out where our good friends Tim and Marcus compare two things and they put them in the good place or the bad place. The current season is makeshift tag teams. This past week was the makeshift tag teams of Matt Hardy and MVP, as well as the makeshift tag team of Double J, Jeff Jarrett, and Owen Hart. I can't wait to see which other ones they're going to be taking care of here in the future. And also, in a flurry over the last week, my good buddy DJ and his friend Brett decided to launch the Wednesday Night Wars podcast, which is going to be going up right against us doing our thing. But I think the two shows will be different enough. As Adam mentioned, you know, we'll throw some Beyond Wrestling in there. We'll throw some other news in there. They're strictly going to be sticking to the AEW on TNT versus the NXT shows on Wednesday nights. But they did kind of like an introductory show, preview for All Out, and then an All Out review. So go check those out. They're over at soon-to-be-named-network.com, soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. And as you are listening to this, as it comes out live, I hope you have already submitted your picks for the Longbox Heroes NFL Pigskin Pick'ems. I know last time I checked, Adam had not submitted his picks. For shame.
I signed up earlier today.
Ah, good. Because I checked last night when we were recording our shows, I informed my co-host that I would come on here and publicly shame you into doing so.
And as your co-host said, I am usually late to the party. I get in right before the last opportunity. So the first game's tomorrow. I re-signed up to both your league and our comic shops league. So I look forward to being last place, as I usually am.
All right. Anyways. Got a lot of people in there. I think we're up to almost 40 people in it. And hey, even if you don't like football, it's still something fun to do to kind of keep you interested and almost caring about football. I know we kind of cover that a little bit more heavy on Longbox Heroes because that's more Todd's thing than anything else. But I would be remiss to implore you, listeners of this show, not to check it out.
Absolutely. And I do appreciate you with the show of solidarity taking the Steelers against the Patriots. Although I will say that I did not pick the Steelers against the Patriots. I go with my head, not my heart.
There you go.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, maybe that'll be the one game that the Patriots throw this year.
Oh, I wish. I hope so. I would rather the Steelers win and me lose the point in the stupid little pick'em league than to get the point and the Steelers lose. But, you know, you got to hedge your bets. So I'm going to be – one of them will come out ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, I heard your voicemail last week on Pod Van Dam.
Oh, that's right. I would be remiss if I did not mention that here as well. I want to thank everyone who did call in with an agenda on Pod Van Dam this past week. I've already called in and left my voicemail for Ed, Jonah, and Pat and having a lot of discussions on the side with them. 209-763-8326. You know, call in, ask them some sort of wrestling question. And hey, check out their podcast. Their podcast is really good.
Mm-hmm. You are, after all, what they call their show uncle, I believe.
Sure. It's just because I'm old, I guess.
I guess I will give them a call now, if that's cool with you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, hold on. Let's see. I do now have their phone number in my phone, so I don't have to ask you what it is.
My most frequent on my phone are my wife, my dad, and them.
All right. Let's see. Hold on. Put on speaker.
Thank you for calling Pod Van Dam.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ed. Hey, Jonah. It's the OA, the official, the original, the only Adam that matters, Adam Van. I'm in the middle of recording At Odds with Wrestling right now. That's At Odds with Wrestling, the Lamborghini of wrestling podcasts, Wednesday nights at midnight. As the unofficial podcast of the LVAC Wrestling, I wanted to do a quick follow-up and see if you guys were indeed going to attend the next Let's Hang Out show, October 25th in Sokol's Bethlehem. Let us know. I'll buy you shots. Don't be cowards. Anyways, like you guys. Like the show. Bye. See? Quick and concise.
I like that. You did a little bit too much ostentatiousness on your introduction, but that's you. I wouldn't have done it.
I'm the show.
And the proper closing is love you, love the show, love you long time.
Nah, I don't throw around that L word.
Oh, boy. That's for another podcast, huh?
Yeah.
So, what was I going to say? So, Ed apparently is going to be in our neck of the woods next weekend.
Yeah, for a 2 o'clock in the morning panel. You going?
No. But I am going to check with Ed to see what time he's going to be in town. And if it fits into his busy schedule of going to an anime convention and doing a panel at 2 o'clock in the morning, maybe taking the hour-ish drive up to the Poconos and maybe going to get something to eat with him.
Ah, the Poconos.
Yes.
Well, keep me posted.
I did submit my credentials to maybe get a free press pass to go, and I got no response. So we'll see.
Oh, okay. Using the other show?
Yeah, definitely.
So, like, okay, never mind. I was about to ask questions about how, like, you can get into one and another. Then I forget about the Durenic effect, so never mind.
No? Go ahead, ask. What's your question?
No, I was going to say, I thought you guys got, like media passes to New York based on the comic podcast.
Yeah. New York, like, the biggies like that we don't get.
Okay. So what's it like, Scranton Con?
Pretty much anything else.
Oh, all right.
You know, we get Baltimore, we got Terrific Con, we got Keystone. Pretty much anything that we've submitted for, the only thing that we've ever been denied for is New York.
Okay.
But we submit for New York every year, and we get turned down every year. Everything else we submit for, we get.
And it's going to be New York and this anime convention. You're not big time enough for this anime show.
Apparently not.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you want to let Joe know that he's big time in your hearts, hit him up on Twitter at Joe Sposto. Let me know if you agree that we shouldn't be throwing around the L word so willy-nilly by tweeting me at the man Adam Van. Wait. Or follow along on the gender neutral monarch of At Odds Wrestling at Odds Wrestling on Twitter. That was a great show today, Joe.
It was a hell of a show.
Yeah. One of my 54 favorites.
I can't pick just one. Pick them all.
Exactly. Although I will recommend that you steer towards the back half for higher quality content from yours truly.
Yeah, let's not go crazy. All right, everyone. Thank you very much for listening to episode 54 of At Odds with Wrestling. For Adam, this is Joe saying thanks for listening and enjoy some wrestling, everybody.